Good morning. Welcome to the first ethics meeting of the year. I think there's a lot of informational items and some good unctuous conversations that we're going to be having over a period of time. Let's get started. So first item, call the meeting to order. The second item, the approval of minutes for the meeting on December 19th. Does anyone want to make a motion?
I move to approve the minutes.
Excuse me. I believe you have a public comment.
Oh, oops. For item number seven. I have two for item number seven.
Yes.
Oh, just kidding. Look at all these. Thank you. Before we move to approve, Mr. Previn, do you want to come give public comment?
Yeah, sure. I'll be very brief, but I wanted to bring it to your attention because I know you were very excited about the 501c3 component from last time, where you approved certain exemptions so that people who are helping the indigent could not have to do too much excessive reporting. And obviously, we appreciate that. I wanted to bring to your attention that a new thing is coming up where neighborhood council members who serve on neighborhood councils in the district, you know, for example, in my district, are setting up 501c3s, little ones, and then requesting money from their neighborhood council. And so, you know, we weren't really at that granular level because everything under $2 million was fine. But what I'm concerned about is that since this body has not traditionally governed the neighborhood councils, they might consider providing some of their top-line guidance with the kind of legal firepower as Ms. Orden and others who could understand why that might seem unsavory to people to have a seated member of a board setting up their own 501c3 in order to then have the board feed that money. It blanches the typical resident's mustache, but none of us would know about it because they aren't doing the proper disclosure. So I would just ask that, you know, I know that you've just closed the file on the 501c3s, but maybe you could ask Heather about looking at that going forward, because I don't know if traditionally it's been a big party to do that, to be on a public office and then fund your own not-for-profit. In some ways, I can see as you apply to, like, the mayor and such, you do have a little bit of that going on where the mayor says, oh, one way to help would be to give to them. But it's not him, it's them. And that's the part where I find it a little bit of a bump. So that's what I want to say about the minutes, and thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Previn. All right. I believe Commissioner...
And I will still move to approve the minutes.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? So moved. Do we have a possible discussion with authorized neighborhood council representatives?
Commissioners, a communication fashioned as a community impact statement was submitted by the Van Nuys Neighborhood Council. However, it does not relate to an agenda item, and therefore it's been, we're treating it as a general public comment.
Okay, wonderful, thanks. So let's move on. Two action items. The first action item is a review of recusals by board member Jill Banks Berard.
Good morning, commissioners. For the record, this is Armin Tarzi, Director of Policy. Item four before you is a recusal review conducted on Commissioner Jill Banks Berard of the Board of Water and Power. In this matter, staff reviewed all the recusals filed by Commissioner Berard along with the matter and believes that while the issue of the recusals may be continuing, they are not significant at this time. And proposes adopting attachment D, which is no divestment order.
Does anyone want a second?
Second.
Wonderful. So moved. Action item number four, a review of recusals by Michael Newhouse, the Vice President of the Area Planning Commission.
Yes, Commissioner Newhouse, same issue. The staff reviewed all of the recusals filed by Commissioner Newhouse. Also reviewed the matter for which he recused himself. Staff proposes adopting attachment D, ordering no divestment.
Does anyone have any comments to make?
No.
I move to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
So moved. Action item number 6, the amended professional services agreement with Kennedy Court Reporters.
Good morning, Heather Holt, Executive Director. This is a contract that we recommend extending. It's an existing contract, and this would continue to make court reporting services available to us as we need them in our investigative and enforcement matters. There's a resolution in Attachment B that you can adopt for that purpose.
Has everyone reviewed the contract?
Yes. I just want to make a comment. Thank you. I think this commission is all about promoting transparency, and I applaud the people who proposed this. We did get a lot of detail, which I think is really helpful. And again, this is kind of what we're all about, so I just wanted to make that comment. And
thank you.
With that, I move to approve the contract.
Great.
Do we have a public comment?
Yeah, oh, you have
a... Oh, sorry.
Okay. Oh, Mr. Previn.
Thank you. And I would echo Commissioner Murray that it is nice to make things transparent, and that's what this is all about. And this is about a transcript service, and it's about up to $20,000 for a period of time. It looked okay to me. I reviewed the details, though, and there's a little section called 3.8, which does state the requirements from Kennedy, and one of the things that they are supposed to do is provide a PDF copy of the transcript, which obviously in 2018 is no trouble, and it makes it easier to communicate, for example, with commissioners and others without having to print out giant wads of paper, including the public. And I did a PRA for that one because they had done the transcript for Kelly Lord, which was the low point in Ethics Commission history, where Hockman served as his own judge and jury, even though he had taken payments from Englander, and this was a guy who challenged Englander. So it was a low point in Ethics Commission history, but nonetheless, we wanted to review the transcript. And when we asked for the transcript, Ishimaru provided it, timely, although late, and then ultimately took a lot of arm twisting. We requested just to get the PDF so that we could share it among other members of the public, the transcript, that is. And regrettably, even though it's contractual that they provided, the Ethics Commission, I guess under the executive director's decision, refused to provide a PDF, which, you know, seems trivial, but I don't think we should pick up the agreement with Kennedy unless they are willing to comply with the contract, even when the staff are, you know, giving mixed messages. Because let's all agree, transcripts are for reading, and reading is for the public, the staff, everybody. And to limit who can access these records is, I think, contrary to our stated purpose. So I appreciate your approving it with the contingency that they immediately provide the transcript for that Kelly Lord matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Previn. Commissioner Murray, did you want to?
At this point, I didn't propose any amendments to the original motion.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. I second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
And we should look at that issue. Thank you.
Okay, information item number 7, an overview of the select campaign finance laws, including the new election schedule and the matching funds program. Before we get started on the presentation, we have Councilmember David Rue, who would like to give public comment.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you so very much for having me here today, and good morning. You know, and I really want to thank all of your work for making elections in Los Angeles more honest, more fair, and more transparent. Today, your commission is starting a complex and important discussion on an exciting package of reforms for the 2020 election cycle. Some of these ideas would empower small-dollar donors and bar contributions from developers while they have a project before the city. Ideas that I proposed last year and I heard from constituents themselves. Other ideas also deserve consideration as your commission reviews what changes are needed to prepare for our first on-cycle election in 2020. This discussion comes on the heels of a long line of strong reforms that the Ethics Commission, that your commission, has placed to broaden access to voters, build trust in city government, and bolster the democratic process in Los Angeles. Of course, we know there's a lot more work that needs to be done. The movement of our elections to be on cycle should ease the burden of voting and increase turnout. And because of that, now more than ever, we need reforms that will reduce the influence of developers with projects before the city, empower and support individual donors, and make it easier for new candidates to compete. We can do this by increasing the matching funds rate for small dollar donations, reviewing contribution limits, and determining the success of the various signature requirements in accomplishing their goals, so that candidates can spend less time raising money and more time in the communities that they hope to serve. We have a big, dynamic city. There are unique challenges to empowering voters and increasing turnout. We need to meet the Los Angeles voters halfway and foster their power, listen to their voice. 2020 is going to be a very important election. And for many reasons, here in LA, we have many important issues and positions on the ballot. So let's also make it an election that's going to be known for supporting small donors and empowering voters whose lives are impacted by the choices that we make every day. Thus, I encourage this body to put a package of recommendations forward by ordinance or by ballot measure to update our campaign finance rules with the goal of increasing voters' trust in our local government. Thank you.
Thank you, Council Member.
Mr. Bill Watkins.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, and nice to meet you all. My name is Bill Watkins, first time here, and I have to say something. I'm just really inspired that I have an all-lady panel in front of me in the current culture, what we have in Washington. I feel like taking a photograph and sending it along. If inappropriate, let me know, but I was going to take one from over there at some point in the room and just say how proud I was that there's a commission in Los Angeles just doing something good and throwing the balance towards the right. My grandmother was the first woman to run for United States Senate from California, Louise Ward Watkins. She got some crushed in the primary, but very proud of her. And anyways, to ethics and to number seven here. My father, son of my grandmother, passed away in December. He was 92. He was a Trump voter and everything politically I'm not, and we had arguments. But we agreed on one thing, that all of this is corrupt. Our politics have gotten corrupt, and it's around private campaign spending. I have a one-pager I'm sending around, and you guys got it this morning. I propose a ban. I like what Mr. Rue is saying. I don't know if David's still in the room, to a point. But I'll tell you something. I'm a deregistered voter as of a year ago. I'm tired of my mailbox being filled with vote for me pamphlets and what do you call them, mailers, that are so expensive while my sidewalk is crumbling. Doesn't make any sense. So is David speaking to that a little bit? Mr. Rue speaking to that a little bit. But I don't believe in giving the devil an inch. The devil will take a mile. It's a hard road. Paul Habib and over at the WESAR office where I live in District 14, they like this. They like these type of ideas. But I had to, the office did give me an inkling what happens when you start to push for these things. The corporations send people, and they are very scary. It's a scary step to take. I hope we really start to look at this to promote public trust, which I don't have anymore, encourage broader participation. I would have run a couple of times. This process is convoluted and made for the rich. And it's environmentally unsound to do the 1,000 signatures. It wastes people's time. It's six. I judged it was 6 minutes per signer that you're trying to get to get you onto the ballot. It's about 6 minutes of a person you've never met in your community. You're asking them to take 6 minutes to vote for you, to think about you, instead of our crumbling sidewalks. So not on my page is an idea. If someone was really dying to give a candidate money, let's set up a sidewalk fund. let's set up a public works fund. If you want to spend money on Los Angeles, spend it on Los Angeles. Let's make this a nice place. That may be enough for me. Avoid actual and apparent corruption. Well, I already talked about that. God bless you all. And if possible, I might at some point take a photo from right around there if no one objects. And I'm really just proud to be in the room, and I look forward to change. I'm a pedestrian sidewalk cleaner volunteer for the city of Los Angeles until someone starts paying me and my friends. I'm formerly homeless, Phi Beta Kappa from UC Santa Barbara. We can make this a beautiful, clean city. It's not there yet, but let's clean up the politics. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Mr. Watkins. Mr. Previn.
Excellent. Thank you. It's Eric Previn from CD2 Studio City. Campaign finance laws are going to be looked at over the next period of time, and then you'll take on some suggestions. So I have a few. One is, I think that the threshold for, say, city council of $25,000 before you can access the matching funds, that's one of the requirements, is way too high for grassroots candidates. And as I think the previous speaker just said, if you can get 500 signatures, give them the $25,000 to start out. We've got $16 million at the end of the fiscal year, if you believe Heather, in the matching fund program. It's only supposed to have around four. So we're not using the money until those who can get it show up to get it, and they will. They will show up. It's always going to incumbents who are able to amass the kind of signatures and everything else. Now, the way it worked in 2015, because in the executive director's report, you'll have a little glance at the Krikorian campaign from 2015 that I was the opponent, so I looked a little bit more closely at that one. You had an example of a sitting council member getting 200 signatures, although when we looked and did an audit, barely. In fact, I would even question whether he got 200 local signatures, but again, 190-something, because there were duplicates and funny business. If you looked at that stack of documents, your head would pop off, because you had photocopies of $5 bills that were redacted with giant Post-its over them. So why would you ever redact a $5 bill unless you're doing something that's a little bit odd, because we don't traditionally redact those kinds of things. Once he got the 200 signatures, he submitted two applications for matching funds to the campaign, to the program, and he received $44,000 in matching funds, but all of that money was given to him after the election. So most of that money was not from the $5 contributions who signed, but from the trustees of Harvard Westlake, who were able to provide $700 contributions, 250 of which would count to the match, and he just fed them all into the big system to get that $45,000. So compared to a campaign like Weezer, who's also being audited, and he is stepping forward to pay $5,000 in penalty for virtually nothing, of the 100 communications that he passed out, five didn't have the label on it or something. So, but he's agreed, because who cares? He's raised millions of dollars. But Krikorian never disclosed that those were trustees who have a very active, or had a very active project right before his desk. So I was hoping we could adjust that. Last time when we talked about the lobbying ordinance, it didn't seem to show up. It does show up in the campaign financing, in the way that lobbyists are allowed to bring campaign contributions to council members and mayor. We should nix that. We should absolutely nix that. That is a good example of a conflict of interest that we do not want or need. And other improvements to this system, I suppose, would be when you have it's 24 months before which time you can start raising money, but how is that helping at all? I mean, that's not like a holdback. So I know there's other items on the agenda, other people want to speak, so I'll continue for now, but I would suggest not increasing the match based on those devastating facts.
Thank you, Mr. Previn.
Sylvia Moore from Common Cause.
Thank you, commissioners. Hi, my name is Sylvia Moore. I am Southern California organizer for California Common Cause. I want to thank you for this comprehensive update to our campaign finance laws in Los Angeles, and looking forward to having this go to the full council for a vote. We believe that the developer ban that Councilmember Ruiz proposed, as well as the increasing the matching funds rate to 6-1, will help improve prospects for more people to run for office, and remove more barriers for more people running for office. We need to broaden and diversify the kinds of people that would like to run but cannot mount a serious campaign because elections are so expensive, and they're so expensive to actually have a credible campaign. And so we want to be able to remove more barriers and have more people run and expand the types of people that run in politically as well as ethnically, and have more voices and have more choices for people to choose from in terms of candidates. So I would hope that this these proposals move forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's it for public comment. Ms. Executive Director and Mr. Tarzai, would you like to come up and... Oh. Mr. Montina. Hi.
Good morning, Commissioners. Good morning. Again, for the record, my name is Armin Tarzai, Director of Policy. I'm joined by Manny Montilla, our Campaign Finance Program Manager, thank you to Councilmember Rue and everyone in the general public for their comments. We have begun to review certain portions of our campaign finance laws, and to kick off this review, the informational item before you provides a detailed explanation and introduction to these laws. But to supplement the introduction, we have created a PowerPoint presentation, which you can also find in Attachment A. That movement in the PowerPoint took a lot of time, so this presentation helps.
It always takes so much longer than you think it will.
Right. This presentation will help explore the current law and also the purpose of this review. With that, let's begin the presentation of the nonstop thrill ride that is the city's campaign finance laws. All right. So first, a roadmap. The way this presentation is going to work is we're going to talk a little bit about the historical background of our laws. We will then move to the purpose of the current review and the process of the review. We'll then move on to the details of the current law, specifically relating to contributions, matching funds, and disclosure requirements. And then we'll close with the next steps of the review. So, to start, let's go back to 1985. Angelinos voted to place limits on contributions and candidates. In 1991, the Ethics Commission was created, and the first campaign finance ordinances, which you'll hear me refer to as the CFO, was adopted. In 2001, term limits were put into place. In 2007, a ballot measure prohibiting lobbyists from making contributions to certain city candidates and office holders was placed on the ballot by the council and approved by the voters. The ballot measure also enacted contribution limits in LAUSD, Los Angeles Unified School District Board of Education elections, and entrusted the Ethics Commission to both administer and enforce the campaign finance laws in LAUSD elections. In 2011, prohibitions on contracting contributions were put in place, which we'll discuss in greater detail later. And in 2002, the CFO was overhauled in several areas of disclosure and with amendments to the matching funds program. In 2014, several additional modifications to the matching funds program were instituted, which were effective for the 2015 election. So, in this review, there are several reasons for the review, some of which you've already heard. First is the new election cycle. The city has historically held elections on odd-numbered years, also known as off-election years, and the voters recently approved moving the election to even-numbered years to coincide with county, state, and federal elections beginning in 2020. This move will require several modifications to accommodate that change. Second, we're compiling data from the 2017 elections and reviewing them along with past elections. This is important because the 2015 and the 2017 election was the first cycle to fully incorporate the current requirements of the matching funds laws. Third, there are changes in state law that may also require modifications in some areas of our law. For example, we'll be looking at several changes made in the recently passed Disclose Act, which was signed by the governor late last year. Those would relate to disclaimer statements, which again we'll talk about a little bit later in the presentation. And finally, there are several motions before City Council relating to the city's campaign finance laws, which were introduced last year. These motions related to contributions, disclosure, and the matching funds program. Copies of the motions are attached in your item in attachment B. Our review process is similar to our past review, kind of like what we did with the recent MLO. We're first and foremost, we are compiling data. We're doing that right now as we speak. We are soliciting public input. We recently sent out an email blast and posted on our website. We will be doing that several more times throughout the process. We also plan on having an interested persons meeting on March 14th. Again, details for that, such as room number, reservations, will again be emailed out and posted on our website. We'll also be relying on our experiences in both administrating and enforcing the laws. We will be looking at other jurisdictions and, you know, see what the new trend is and also see what's working and what's not working with them. And then eventually we'll be coming to you with recommendations and looking forward to a fruitful discussions on those recommendations. So let's talk about current law. Our campaign finance laws can be basically found in four bodies of law. It's the charter, the CFO, the matching funds regulations, and the California Political Reform Act. The charter includes limitations on campaign contributions in city elections, expenditure limitations, public matching funds, and campaign finance related to LAUSD elections. The CFO includes fundraising windows for candidates, required disclosure information, matching funds rules, communication disclaimers, and other areas such as office holder and legal defense committees. The admin code includes additional matching fund regulations such as determination of qualification, processing claims and payments. And finally, the Political Reform Act also includes additional disclosure requirements, certain limitations, and also definitions that are used throughout the CFO. Everyone good so far? Am I going too fast? Okay, great. All right, when we talk about things like contribution limits, prohibitions, and disclosures, it is important to remember the goals of such limits and the goals of the disclosure. These include promoting the public trust, encouraging broader participation, avoiding both the actual and apparent corruption, limiting financial influence of private parties, and also protecting the procurement process. So let's start with talking about contribution limits. But first, what is a contribution? A contribution is anything of value given to a candidate or a campaign committee without full or adequate consideration in return. Typically, these kind of contributions are monetary. They also include loans or the candidate's personal funds. But contributions also may be non-monetary, also known as in-kind contributions. These are essentially goods and services that are given to the committee. By limiting the amount a person may contribute to a committee or a candidate, these laws essentially help to avoid the actual or apparent corruption that may result when a special interest heavily finances a candidate's bid for elected office. The charter imposes limits on contributions to all city and LAUSD candidates and their campaign committees, as you can see here. These are from the 2017 election. For example, the per-person limit for a council candidate is $700 per election. That's very important per election, meaning $700 for the primary, for example, and then another $700 for the general, as those are separate elections. There is also a cumulative non-individual limit for 2017. For example, for council, it was $210,100. All these numbers are adjusted annually based on the Consumer Price Index. In fact, in the next 2 weeks, we'll be releasing the numbers for the next year based on the CPI adjustments. So look out for that. Lastly, under certain circumstances, the law requires aggregation of contributions from two or more persons, which effectively treat them the same. This was required when one person exerts a certain level of control over another person's contribution and is designed to prevent circumventing the contribution limits. For example, if a contribution is made by, let's call it Big Bob's Auto, and another contribution is made by Big Bob himself, who is the sole owner, those contributions would be aggregated or counted together. Sorry for that example. right. Let's talk about prohibited contributions. As mentioned earlier on the history slide, prohibitions of contributions from lobbyists, lobbying firms, and bidders were enacted by Los Angeles voters. This applies if the lobbyist or firm is registered to lobby the office held or sought by the candidate, but it does not apply to lobbyist employers or clients and does not limit fundraising. Now, city laws prohibit political contributions from certain bidders, contractors, and subcontractors, specifically bidders on contracts of $100,000 or more, and the contract, and if the contract has to be approved by the city council, mayor, city attorney, or the controller's office. The prohibitions begin on the day the bid is submitted, or in non-competitive procurement processes, the day the potential contract is first discussed. For unsuccessful bidders, a prohibition ends on the day the contract is signed, and for successful bidders, a prohibition ends 1 year after the contract is signed. Additionally, there is a foreign national ban. This stems from federal law, which basically states that a foreign national is prohibited from contributing to elections. All right, in addition to those kind of limits and prohibitions, there are what we call city fundraising windows. And this is to limit fundraising activity in non-election years. The charter and the CFO regulate when the candidates can solicit and receive contributions. Basically, a city council candidate may not engage in fundraising more than 18 months before the primary election. Candidates for mayor, city attorney, and controller may not engage in fundraising for more than 24 months before the primary election. And if we look here, this table kind of outlines those dates. The dates, the 18 months before and the 24 months before for the primary. Then for the general election, the window for that opens up after the primary election. Now, after the actual election is held, the fundraising window closes 12 months after the general election for both those elections. And that is to, for example, retire debt, inauguration expenses, those kind of fundraising activities. Now moving on to LAUSD fundraising windows. This is similar to the city council candidates in that they start 18 months before the election. However, one of the differences is that LAUSD candidates may not engage in fundraising more than 9 months after an election, as opposed to the city's 12 months. Again, that's only to retire campaign debt or those kind of activities. Now let's move to matching funds program. Anyone have any questions? So this was first enacted or voted on by the voters in 1990. It is a voluntary program designed to provide limited public funds to campaigns of qualified city candidates. The program does not extend to LAUSD candidates. And the goals of the program are to help candidates communicate their views, increase the value of smaller contributions, limit excessive fundraising, limit campaign spending, make elections more competitive, and avoid both actual and apparent corruption. The matching funds program strives to accomplish these goals by matching a candidate's contribution with general funds. And before we get into that, let's dive into the program a little bit. As mentioned, it is the program itself is 100% voluntary and designed for city candidates only. To participate, a candidate must first declare that they agree to participate in the program by filing Form 20. I don't expect you to memorize that. To qualify for the program, the candidate must appear on the ballot, for example, be opposed to someone else who appears on the ballot, limit personal and overall spending, receive 200 in-district contributions for council races or citywide candidates receive contributions from within the city for citywide offices. And receive threshold amounts of contributions. We have a more detailed attachment, if you look at attachment E, which really breaks down for every office sought what those requirements are. And as I mentioned, receiving 200 in-district qualified contributions, let's look at what that term means. A qualified contribution is a term you're going to hear a lot through this meeting and also at our next meeting when we discuss matching funds. It's basically a contribution that is both lawful, a contribution that is monetary. It does not include in-kind non-monetary contributions. It can't be from the candidate's or candidate's immediate family or personal funds. It can't be a loan or a pledge. And it can be a contribution within the, with actually earlier before the fundraising window. To qualify for the program, a candidate must also raise a certain amount of contributions to qualify for the program. So if you're a council candidate, as we see here, you must not only meet those qualifications, but you must also raise $25,000. Now, a candidate may receive the maximum contributions permitted, but only $250 per contributor count towards that threshold. So let me give you an example. The maximum contribution permitted of $250, so if someone gives $400 to a city council candidate, what is matched to this threshold, what counts to this threshold, is only $250. Now, does that make sense? Any questions? Okay, great. So I'll make sure I'm explaining this right. All right.
It makes sense, but yes, I understand.
Okay.
Yes.
So let's move on to the matching funds program, the claims. Now, to receive matching funds, a candidate must submit a Form 22. The committee would disclose qualified contributions with supporting documentation on this form. Supporting documentation includes a copy of the check or electronic payment and the contributor certification that the contributor provided accurate information, including the residence address. Staff would have 4 days to review the claim once they have all the information required. Now, there is a maximum amount of funding available to qualified candidates, which is based on two criteria, the office sought and the election they're receiving the funds for. The amount available to a candidate ranges from $100,000 to a city council candidate in the primary election, all the way as high as $800,000 for a mayoral candidate in the general election. Now, when we're talking about those funds, now let's talk about the rate of match. Match rates are essentially the amount of funds that are matched with the general fund. So a candidate who obtains 500 valid signatures on their nominating petitions receives a match rate of one public dollar for every one qualified private dollar. The second match rate applies to candidates who obtain 1,000 valid signatures on nominating petitions, or 500 on the nominating petition and 500 on what we call Form 21, which is matching funds additional signatures. But basically 1,000 signatures, they would receive two public dollars for every one qualifying private dollar in the primary and four public dollars for every one qualifying private dollar in the general. So an example, a city council candidate who received a $75 qualified contribution would receive $300 in matching funds for that contribution in the general election, 4-1. All right, now let's move to our final main topic of review, and that concerns disclosure. The goals of our disclosure requirements are to promote transparent elections, identify who is speaking or funding political communications, identify who supports, opposes certain candidates or those candidates' views. Disclosure of campaign and political communications are important to evaluate in full context, but let's move on to basically the three main areas of disclosure, which are contributions and expenditures, campaign communications, and independent expenditures. I'm going to get into detail for all three. So disclosure reports. These are what you see in front of you is an example of the Form 460. So candidates and their campaign committees are required to periodically file these statements to disclose information about their contributors, contributions, and expenditures. This allows the public to understand who supports a candidate and how the campaign committee is funded. The disclosure done through this state form provides us with that information. The example before you is a Schedule A, which are monetary contributions received. The committee would identify each contributor which reaches an itemization threshold of $100 or more, and the information includes their name, address, employer, occupation, and the contribution, the type of contribution through the contributor code. The codes are broken down to individual, a registered committee, a political party, a small contributor committee, or other. We have a complete Form 460 attached to this item, and we have this example here, so you don't have to memorize that in detail. Now let's look at what the disclosure requirements are. They are similar in the sense that there is an itemization threshold of $100. The committee or the candidate would disclose the payee's name, address, in either the code or description, for example, whether it's legal defense or for mailings or for office expenses or radio airtime, and then they would also disclose the amount of the expenditure. The other part of disclosure, part of our disclosure requirements come to campaign communications. Candidates and their committees must disclose certain campaign communications and in a timely fashion. What is a campaign communication? It's essentially a communication that advocates the election or defeat of a candidate and is authorized, distributed, or paid for by a candidate or a controlled committee. Now, these campaign communications must be filed within 24 hours after distribution in the months leading up to the election, or 5 business days after distribution all other times. These communications must have a disclaimer. Any of us who receive mail or watch television have heard these disclaimers in the lead up to an election. It discloses who paid the communication, their address, who paid for the communication, their address, city, and directing them to our website where they can find more information about how much it costs, who paid for it, et cetera. With LAUSD campaign communications, they have a similar disclaimer and filing requirement. Mailings and audio communications must state the candidate committee who paid for it and also the address for mailings. They must be filed in a timely fashion within 24 hours of airing or distributed if it's a written communication. So our lastly, let's talk about independent expenditure communications. These are ones that advocate the election or defeat of a candidate, ballot measure, or for a particular cause or result in the election. The big difference between these and campaign communications is that an independent expenditure is not authorized, it's not distributed or paid for by a candidate or a controlled committee, hence independent. Federal election law, especially after a 1979 judgment, allows political parties to spend as much as they want and as for party building activities, et cetera, but most recently the Citizens United case really affected our independent expenditure requirements. Disclosure of IEs, as we say, in a city election, an independent expenditure communication must include a disclaimer. If the person making the communication meets the thresholds listed here, for example, if the IE had expenses associated with it of $1,000 or more. It also has a similar disclaimer, but this one says that it's who it's paid for, the address, the city, and that it's not authorized by a city candidate or a candidate committee, as well as directing individuals to view the ad to our website for additional information. Now, if an independent expenditure communication meets those thresholds, a copy of the communication must be filed with the Ethics Commission. It also would be accompanied by a Form 57, which includes the name of the filer, city, state, phone number, contact information, and also the purpose of the communication, whether it's to support or oppose a candidate or a ballot measure. All right. Independent expenditures must be filed within 24 hours in the months leading up to the election and 5 business days in all other times. And for LAUSD-related independent expenditure communications, the disclosure threshold is $1,000 or more. And disclosure of the communications include information about the speaker or the spender of the communication and the contributors if it's an independent expenditure committee.
Mr. Tarzi?
Yes.
Can you just, going back to when communications have to be filed, it says 24 hours after first distribution in months before the election. Like how many months?
Sure.
Sure. Good morning, Commissioners. Manuel Montilla, Campaign Program Manager. After the candidate filing week, which typically in the past has happened in around November of the year before the election, we moved to this earlier timely filing for campaign communications. Mm-hmm. So relatively less than 5 months before the election, do we move to the 24-hour disclosure of those communications?
Okay. So if it's in the days before the election, it would have to be, it's a 24-hour period, not a five-day period. Is that correct?
Correct. Okay. And that's to provide the public quicker information about the advertisements running as there's an uptick the closer you get to an election.
And how quickly would something like that be on the City Ethics website?
It would be instantaneously.
Okay, great. Thanks.
finally, with the LAUSD related independent expenditure communications, as I mentioned, the disclosure threshold is $1,000 or more. And it, again, includes information about the spender, the contributors, if it's a committee, and the filing deadline is 24 hours, similar to the campaign communications. So with that, to close, we are excited about this review of the campaign finance laws. We're looking forward to receiving as much public input as we can. We will be holding, as mentioned earlier, an interested persons meeting on March 14th, details of which will be emailed and advertised on our website soon. Thank you very much for your
time. Thanks so much, Mr. Tarzi and Mr. Montilla.
Now, without going into much of what we're really going to be talking about next time, what was the genesis of determining that it is time to revisit some of these issues? Are we hearing complaints from the public, or is it internal concern?
Sure. Well, there are several factors. First, as mentioned, this is the first time we have a full election cycle to review how effective our current matching funds program is and the requirements in that program. So we definitely want to take a look to see if anything, if everything's working right, also if need be, any changes that are needed with the program now that we have a full cycle to analyze the data from. Number two, there are the much-needed technical changes since we're moving on to the even-numbered election cycle, so that we have to change in order to make sure our laws are prepared for that even-numbered cycle beginning in 2020. Also, there are several council motions that are currently there, and we want to make sure that, you know, we are ready to talk about those should those move anywhere at the council level.
I want to say I think this is a very, very timely review. I'm glad that we're doing it in advance, so far in advance of the 2020 election. I think, with the consolidation of an election cycle, it means that there's going to be a lot more navigating around making sure that things are efficient and effective. I want to say how much I appreciate you sort of elevating these goals around the contributions and campaign finance, and I want to keep those in perspective as we engage in this conversation, that this is really about promoting the public trust. As Councilman Rue said, encouraging small dollar donors, increasing turnout, although that's not really the mission of this commission, but ensuring a greater level of transparency and looking at what our matching funds program, how efficient it's been so far, and all of the ways that we can refine it going forward. In reading through a lot of what was presented, I saw that we have currently a $14 million surplus, and by the end of the fiscal year, it's going to be $16 million. And so it would occur to me that maybe this is extremely cumbersome to get matching funds, and simultaneously, as we frequently sit here and we have people who come before us who have not acted as in the best interest to get those matching funds, how can we be proper guardians, both dispersing matching funds in a way that's efficient and effective, and encouraging a broader playing field, making sure that people across the community feel welcome to not only run, but have the space to communicate their values and spend more time talking to voters, as well as ensuring that the general fund and that these matching funds are spent in a way that is efficient and effective. So I do have a number of questions, but I wanted to say, like, putting these goals forth feels really, really good, and I think that's, you know, we should be focusing on that as we think about refining these laws. I have some questions about some of the things that the council members brought up. The first one is around the motion presented by Councilman Rue and co-presented by council members Krikorian and Buscaino, the developer ban. I know that we have a few bans already, so contractors and bidders, and then also a lobbying ban. Are there any other jurisdictions in either the state of California or across the country that have a ban looking at developers, or similar to what Mr. Watkins presented, keeping private money out of elections?
Broadly speaking, with private money out of elections, there are, I don't have a specific example, but there are examples of, you know, taking non-individual contributions out of the conversation. But with regard to developers, we haven't yet looked into that. That is part of the review process. So when we do come back at the next meeting, that's something we are going to look into to see what other jurisdictions have, if anything, about developers.
Okay. And what about... increased matches? So currently, you know, you get 500 signatures, you get a 1-to-1 in the primary, a 4-to-1 in the general, if I got that right. I didn't memorize it. and, you know, there's this motion that I believe the Ethics Commission introduced prior to me being here, prior to all of us being here, of a 6-to-1, and it was reintroduced. So are there other jurisdictions that are doing something like that that we could look at?
I appreciate you bringing that up. That is something that we had previously introduced, the 6-to-1 match, and that is part of one of the council motions that will be part of our review, looking at other jurisdictions as well.
Does anyone else have questions? Yeah.
Thank you so much. I personally loved and was nerding out on this presentation, and I really appreciated it. I thought it was very well done, and for me, I've been saying I really believe in our education and outreach community arm as much as the enforcement arm, and I saw in one of the motions from the council specific provision to add resources for the enforcement, and I would echo that on the education policy outreach side as something that's very important for us to promote, because I think we're making those resources this sample of what you can do and really do broadly in the community will be very important, because I have seen in my time here that a lot of folks, there's some intentional kind of violation, but there's a whole lot of less so. And so I think that really speaks to the importance of really what you're doing and how it could really help communicate the rules and trust in the process for more people. So I wanted to say that, and I will strongly support some recommendation on adding more resources to our education area. A couple other just quick comments. One is, not to answer now, but I'd be curious about an analysis of independent expenditure funding compared to campaign funding and whether there's similar restrictions there. I'm guessing we're going up against federal law there, but I'm wondering do we have some data on what it looks like at city and LAUSD races, meaning if we try to reduce who can support at the city or LAUSD level, do those folks then shift to an IE? And how can we get to the goal of limiting outside influence in a negative way on these kinds of issues? So that's one area to kind of try to assess, as we're all kind of believing in this goal of transparency, good government. The other is, and it's connected to the interested persons meeting, which I think is a great idea to really get a lot of the good government groups together to think about, and you have common cause here, but to think about what can, what is the broader input, because there are some specific motions, but what including these, but what else? I know we're also coming up in 2020 is census and 2021 redistricting, and what is the role, I don't know who was here in the last redistricting cycle, but what is the role of this commission, what recommendations can we make on that to create more transparency and good government at the city level? Because right now we're talking about something that's going to happen in 2020, so maybe it's a good time to start thinking through what we can do around the very important and connected somewhat process of redistricting that's going to happen soon after.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Loved it.
Does anyone else? No?
I just had one more suggestion for our next round of discussions about this. I was wondering, do we have the statistics on how many, what percentage of candidates actually take advantage of the matching funds, like in any race? And if we have some, I know I've seen it kind of buried places, but if that could be illuminated,
right.
What percentage of candidates for each, like the council districts, the mayor, and how many people, if we could get some cold, hard statistics on that. And I know a breakdown of the actual money in the last campaign cycle that was distributed to candidates in the matching funds program.
Great.
And to just carry on the educational piece of it too, how we get the word out, not just about limits, but the availability of campaign funds and the fact that they have been under, at least to this point, underutilized.
And just to add to that, I believe the charter says that this money, pot of money, can only be used specifically for matching funds, but again, so right now it's flush, right? $16 million is a whole lot of money, which means it's consistently underutilized. So I wonder if there are other things that are not flush in this city that, like, I don't know, staff or something on the Ethics Commission, if that money could be funneled or channeled or reassessed for something along those lines. I don't, so I'd be curious to have that conversation as well. And then also just one last thing on the matching funds. So it says that if there's a fiscal emergency declared, then there's the matching funds are limited or withheld. I'm curious to know what a fiscal emergency looks like and what the process, how we you know, spot that ahead of time and don't distribute matching funds, and then, you know.
Great.
I think that's it. Is everybody? Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for this suggestion.
We're really looking forward to this conversation.
And I didn't see in this what time of day the March program will be.
I think it's tentatively scheduled 1:30, but we'll send out an email blast and post on our website with the actual time and the room number.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So the rest of the we have four more we have public comment on these things. So the next item on our information items is the lobbying report, and we have Mr. Previn, who'd like to give public comment.
Eric Priven from CD2 and Studio City. And the lobbying report is well done. Annually, we spend approximately, in 2017, I believe it was $63 million worth of lobbyist fees were collected, not by the Ethics Commission, but by lobbyists to do their work. There's another category which confused me, which is called, that's called payment from clients, $63 million for 2017. The other category is called payment to lobbyists, and that's a smaller number, like $15 million typically. So when I asked about that,
the result was, maybe you should ask the lobbyists what that is. And I feel that we should do better than that, because the lobbyists will give us whatever answer they want. So maybe somebody like Heather or the team could provide an answer as to what specifically that is. And just for the record, we're doing a very nice job of increasing these lobbying numbers annually. $63 million is a robust number, but nothing compared to the state, which is $339 million for the same period. And the county, to their credit, have not yet tabulated it, because and I have not tabulated it, but it is interesting. I wanted to just address how lobbyists and campaign finance work together. You know, David Rue's idea about limiting, for example, developer contributions is an interesting area. But Jameson, who lobby with five different firms, check me on that, but it's amazing, are a real estate company, one of the biggest in Southern California. I followed them very closely. They're working with a developer named Hankey, who is a subprime auto insurance guy. And David took lots of contributions from Jameson. So I would ask that if he's going to stand up on the high horse and say, we're not taking money from developers, it's inappropriate, that he should give back all that Jameson money, because maybe they were not advertising themselves as developers, but you do not need to be a scholar to see that they are very much developers. They are the partner, the real estate partner in a big development company.
Thank you.
So I would appreciate that. And also, that'll cover it for now.
Thank you, Mr. Previn. So I know we have some public comment on items 12 and 13, but
I have one comment too on the contributions.
Before we go to the pre-comp, can I just has everybody read? Are we comfortable moving on from the lobbying and recusal report to the pre-confirmation? Yes. Is everybody okay?
But I have a comment on the
recusal?
No, on the lobbying report.
Oh, you do?
Yes. Okay, just a comment. I know we're in the process of complying with our new formats. The part I did notice that I thought was very, very much improved was what the individual matter was. I thought the descriptions, with rare exceptions, were entirely understandable and could be traced and look at it. I know we are still working out exactly who and how people are lobbied, but the description, the filers have certainly been listening.
Yes. Thank you. So did you say you also had something on the...
No, I just came in a little late.
Okay. The items 8 through 11, we've all read them, so maybe we can move on to the executive director's report, which we also have public comment on. If everybody's comfortable with that, has everybody read? Okay, great. So, Mr. Previn.
Sure, thanks for your indulgence. You know, I wasn't able to make the last meeting. These meetings are tough because they're right at the time when the County Board of Supervisors typically meets, but today, no. So again, as I mentioned earlier, WESAR is being given a $5,000 minor penalty for not noticing some campaign contributions properly somehow. Fair enough. You also looked at, because it was 2015, Paul Krikorian's various committees, including a committee called Friends of Krikorian, which was a state assembly committee that he set up around 2000. And what he started doing, because he loaned that committee a lot of money in the beginning, he's a lawyer, he gave him $100,000 at the outset in 2000. What he started doing was he started providing an opportunity for cherished partners who want to do business in front of the city to pay to that account. But since it's a payback to the loan, the check is made out to Paul Krikorian. So Athens Services, perhaps you'll remember that group, that's the one of the many firms in the imbroglio about Recycle LA and the trash problems, gave him $4,000. Frank Lima, who is a robust lobbyist for UFLEC at the time, I think, gave him substantial money. He didn't take it back. But others, like Afriat, who's a lobbyist, again, a lobbyist giving a council member at the city hall money in his own name for another committee that should have been closed years ago, but as I think Bob Stern and your esteemed colleague, President Levinson, who's not here today, said at one point, it smells to high heaven. It does smell to high heaven. And so when the City Ethics Commission looked at that audit, because he controlled it during the 2015 election cycle, they found nothing. Not even mentioned that he had returned the Afriat money for city bid, that he had returned, I think, a Jimmy Blackman check. Jimmy Blackman, again, you made a finding against him a couple months ago, just in case you forgot who we're talking about. So I just find that we've not done a great job of exposing what's going on in our halls of power. If we leave that out of an audit where we look at, I mean, all you need to do is click on the newspaper articles about these things, and you can read about them. But we don't do that. So I think that that's a shortfall, and we should do a better job of bringing up those details. And finally, I'll just say this as I leave. The matching fund that I know you just talked about, so this is not on the record, but that matching fund has a – one of the requirements is that you must agree to debate. Now, as the Ethics Commission, including Mr. Perez, who has filed several grievances about it, will tell you, Mr. Krikorian did not agree to debate his very charming challenger at the time. And I don't know how that's acceptable. And then when you look at the fine print, David Tristan holds up a little card that says, well, if you look closely, it says he agrees to debate, but he doesn't say he has to debate. It just says he has to agree. I mean, come on, is what I say to that. We need to uphold a reasonable standard. The man took $44,000 in public matching funds. He can stand up and have a debate. I gave him every chance. You know, so I think that we need to do a better job. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Pepin. Ms. Holt, is there anything you'd like to add?
The only thing that I would like to add is the official verbal announcement that our new and improved modern website has been launched. So please check us out at ethics.lacity.org.
Wonderful. I was on it, and it's great, and I've actually been pitching people to go on and use it. So
since our monthly totals went down.
Yes, just to alleviate any concern about that, last January 2017 had far more hits because it was 2 months before an election. So we tend to have a huge increase in traffic then. So we're doing okay.
Yeah. We do have some general public comment for item number 13. Genevieve, and I'm sorry, I can't pronounce your last name.
Good morning, Geneviève Clavrol. I am very concerned because a few months ago, at the Commission on the Status of Women, a member was nominated, Rachel Huissard. And when the issue that day come up on our first meeting about sexual harassment and anything having to do sexual harassment, she did not say a word or a peep. And that's what concerned to me, since her husband had been accused of sexual harassment and she had decided to stand by her man and so on. Personally, I don't think she should be as a commission on the status of women. She's not the representation of what we need. And when myself and another member of the public brought that issue, we were kind of, you know, discarded and so on. That thing is a very important issue, especially if she wants to run also to follow her husband in his position. That, to me, is not very kosher. And I think is in the population of, 2 million people in Los Angeles, we can find another woman who can be a better representation. That's my point. Also, I am concerned that in LA City, we allow commissioner and member of the public to be bullied. And I said it's a difference between freedom of speech and bullying the commissioner and the public. I wrote a letter to Mayor Garcetti on January 7 on that issue with non-response, and I'm very concerned. So I will appreciate that. And I know he did receive that letter because Supervisor Mark Riley Thomas gave it to him personally.
Thank you so much. Are there any additional announcements?
Do you have any for general public comment?
Oh, I don't.
I did a slash and then Jen.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Mr. Watkins. I missed that. Why don't you?
Not very good.
That's okay. It's probably better than mine. My brother, who was formerly a kindergarten teacher, told me that my handwriting is worse than his students. But it's because I'm gifted, so I have no time to think about writing. I have too many things I'm tackling. I'm sure it's the same for you.
Lost art. I don't know. I have many gifts. I don't think Handwriting's one of them. I used to do W that never ended because I'm a William Ward Watkins, so I had a lot of W's, and then but I used to not know when to stop. Strike that from the record. That's irrelevant. Anyways, so my time's going 20 seconds. So
we can restart it.
Whatever works. I might just read aloud the Rue motion first paragraph, which I like, and it could be an addition to my page, and I like it. I don't like the rest of the motion, but I like that paragraph. The influence of money in our political system casts a long, heavy shadow over our democracy. This is item 7, attachment B, 3 of 5. Candidates are forced to spend inordinate amounts of time seeking out donors instead of voters, creating a widespread perception of influence peddling and corruption, undermining the electorate's faith in candidates and elected officials, and discouraging voter participation. So I support that, I wanted to say, from what those gentlemen did on their motion. Not the rest, because, again, and I don't want to repeat myself, but I think it's time to stand up. And before I go in this last minute, I'm going to just say that I want to keep a prayer and a thought for this room. This room has a relationship to school shootings. We begin to say no here. We just decide, hey, in Los Angeles, city of Los Angeles, we're going to start saying no. It reverberates, and the NRA has to walk away, become a lobbyist with their words and their writing, and they can do a lot of things to lobby, but they need to stop paying our politicians and getting involved. We've been corrupted. What I'm saying also can be dangerous. I've decided to come out against scary people, covert operations, CIA, NRA, all of these things. I'm out, but it's kind of scary, and my prayer is we do what we do and be safe about it. Begin to say no. Bring the electorate back. Bring sidewalk cleaning back, reduce wages, what we're making at city council. It's exorbitant and insane. And let's start saying no, and God bless us. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Watkins.
Thank you.
I think someone just came in and wants to give one last public comment. Sir, are you here for us?
Public comment?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
We're just about to adjourn, but we'd love to hear from you before we do. What is it? This is just general public comment, sir?
General public comment.
Great. Can you just...
Chair, members of the board, those of you at the sound of my voice, I'm Morris Griffin. I'm better known as Big Money Griff, the problem solver. And I'm here today to say to you that it disturbs me that not one of our elected officials or anyone else in the country has come up with solutions to the problem that we're facing with our schools when we talk about these copycat massacres. So I'm here today to say to you straight out, we need to have a deadbolt lock on all of our classroom floors or all of our classroom doors to our schools so that we can deter the massacres from getting in. We know that if you have a school and you have a security guard here, there's no security guard back here, and nothing is stopping him from coming into the school. We need to have, if nothing else, we need to have a sliding door that would be equivalent to a metal door that would have a deadbolt lock so they can't get in, and then a regular door that would be locked. But more importantly, it disturbs me to hear that our kids are in the closet tweeting, scared like cattle in a corral, waiting for the massacres to come in within AR-15, ready to blow them away, and there's nothing that they can do. I need your wisdom. I need your integrity and your morality to understand, as women, we have to protect our children, our youth. And as a brother like no other, Black Lives Matter, but all lives matter. And so I'm here today to hopefully pray that you will pass a motion that we the people want to see from our Proposition 30 money, which is $48 billion from 2011 to 2018, which has been sunsetted in 2016 when P45 got elected. We want to make sure that that $4 billion is used to help protect our schools for public safety service. That's all of my time. Thanks for yours. I'm Morris Griffin, better known as Big Money Griff. I'm out.
Thank you so much, Mr. Griffin. Have a wonderful day.
There you go.
And with that, check out the new City Ethics website, and let's adjourn. Do I have a motion?
I move we adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? So moved. Have a great day.
Thank you.